Good morning. It's good to see everybody this morning. I have the very fortunate task of having a dentist that is a really good friend of mine. His son and my son are the same age. And so when I go to the dentist, it's like kind of reconnecting with an old friend. And we always share life together. And like it happens in every dentist office, my dentist comes in after the tech has cleaned my teeth and they want to look at your mouth. So I'm sitting there open wide and they're poking instruments in my mouth. And he starts to talk to me. You know, and he says, well, how is Billy? How about blah, blah, and I'm going, blah, 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 blah. And it never fails that he reaches in and grabs hold of my tongue, and I get the part of examining your mouth, pulls my tongue out, and he's looking in my mouth, holding my tongue, and talking to me. And this one particular day, I don't know if he just forgot he was holding my tongue or what, but he's like asked me a question, and he's holding my tongue. Y'all know him. He's Bruce Camp. And so y'all, that'll help y'all know, y'all, a lot of y'all understand. So Bruce is sitting there looking at me, and I'm kind of going, my eyes are starting to water, and he turns loose of my tongue, and I said, Bruce, you have me by the tongue. You have me. I can't say anything. And I never realized till I started to unfold our text for today from James chapter 3, how true that statement really is. Because with the tongue, we control the whole body. That's what James is teaching us. See, whether we want to admit it or not, the tongue is a tattletale. It tells on our hearts. Jesus says, out of the abundance of my heart, my mouth speaks. The tongue is a revealer of what's in our heart. Nothing is more telling of my heart than my tongue. And it's of great, great concern. Did you realize that James talks about the tongue, mentions the tongue in every chapter of the entire book? But here in chapter 3, he gives it some specific time, and he talks about this idea of taming our tongues. Has anybody here ever said something, and it got to about right there, and you went, give me them back. Because you knew immediately you had said the wrong thing. Or maybe you said something and if you watched somebody just melt in front of you because you realized the moment you said it, it was the wrong thing. Everybody has trouble taming our tongues. So we'll be in James chapter 3 verses 1 through 12. And I'm going to just kind of take this in parts and chunks. And we're just going to kind of work through this warning that James gives us and this idea about taming our tongue. And he starts in verses 1 and 2 and he says, not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect and able to keep their whole body in check. The implication of what James is saying is you must take good care not to thrust yourselves into a teaching position because a teacher basically makes their trade on their tongue. And you have a high liability to abuse that and to bring upon yourself judgment. And he starts at the very top with teachers to let us know that, look, this is something that all of us struggle with. If you remember what James said in chapter 1, in verse 26, he says, those who consider themselves religious, yet do not keep a tight rein on their tongues, deceive themselves, and their religion is worthless. So this idea that there's a relationship between the trueness of our faith and the words we speak is consistent here in the book of James. And what he's telling us is that if the words we speak are a measure of true faith, then for those who articulate faith or those who teach, We need to be especially careful about the words that we use. It also reminds us that, guess what? Even a teacher can have dead faith or false faith, be a hypocrite, if you will. Now, this should not keep us from sharing the Word. The idea here is that, look, you can't get away from, this is what we do in church. Billy, I met somebody, I need you to tell them about Jesus. That is not what James is talking about. We are still be able to communicate the gospel and tell people of the good news. What it means is that we are not to embark upon a teaching ministry without being aware of the seriousness that's involved. The fact that there will be judgment for those who ascend to this role. He even goes on in verse 10 to say, look, we all stumble in many ways. You know, some might say, look, I can control my tongue. Well, here's the deal. If I had a video on your dashboard of you all week in your car, I just hazard a guess that there'd be at least one time this week where it got out of control. And if you don't think so, James says, yeah, you're lying. The mouth is certainly one of the major ways in which we sin. And he goes on from here to give us some illustrations. A tongue is a little bitty thing, or a big thing in a little package, isn't it? See, it's amazing to me that I am in the ministry because I struggle with words. If my son-in-law was here, he'd be keeping track. It's a big thing in a little package. He says in verse 3 and following down to verse 5, when we put bits in the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder whenever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. He starts with a horse. Do you know how you control a horse? You put a piece of steel in their mouth across their tongue, and you attach a rein to that piece of steel, and you pull on it, and you control the entire horse by pressure on the tongue. So it makes good sense for us. It's a very good illustration to understand that we control our lives by the words that we speak. By controlling a horse's tongue, you control the horse's movements. You control the whole body by controlling the tongue. How many of you have ever seen a Clydesdale? Man, I've had the chance growing up in Florida, you saw them. They stayed in Tampa quite a bit, so you saw them at a lot of things. And when I was a little kid, I was just in awe of the size of a Clydesdale. And you stand beside these horses, they weigh upwards of 2,000 pounds. And what's controlling them? There's, you know, six, I think, on one side and six on the other side. And what's controlling them is just these reins and a bit in their mouth. And it controls, you know, I don't know, 1,200 pounds of horses on each side of the team. So that's 2,400 pounds a horse in just some reins and some bits. And it controls everything that they do. You can control, if you can control your tongue, you can direct your whole body. Now here's what I know about horses, having been around them. I've never had a horse run up to me and go, take me for a ride. I never had a horse volunteer to go, you know, I've never heard somebody say, my horse used to come up and scratch or paw or put its hoof on the gate so I would take it out and let it plow. A horse without a bridle is useless. If we claim to be followers of Christ and we cannot bridle our tongues, then it's consistent with what James says. We are useless. He goes on from there to speak of a ship. How many of you have ever been on a cruise ship? I remember the first time we walked in there on a cruise ship. Carol and I have been on one cruise. We walked in there and I went, wow. I mean, there's this grand entranceway. You got rooms upon rooms. You got space upon space. And what's the great thing about being on a cruise? You eat and eat and eat. I mean, there's dining rooms. They got a 24-hour buffet. What is that? It's like a little city. And we are sitting there on this cruise ship at the dock, and we're standing outside, and the whole thing starts to move sideways. It doesn't go forward, it doesn't go back, it just eases away from the dock, and it gets just the right amount of way, and what? It takes off. And the whole time we're on the ship, I'm wanting to go up there and see the controls and get my hands on the rudder. And Carol's like, no way. You'll kill people. But the idea here, you know, we pulled into port and they did the same thing. They bring that huge ship up to the dock sideways, kind of parallel park it between two boats, other big ships. It was an amazing thing to watch. And they do it all with what? Rudders. You know, I don't know, this big around. But very small and compared to the size of the ship. The idea here is power applied at the right point brings control. And the problem is we don't want to let the power of God be applied to the right point, our tongues, so that we would have control. And therefore we live lives that are out of control because our tongues are out of control. If we allow God to renew our hearts and regenerate our souls, then He applies power through the Holy Spirit to the right spot. We tame our tongues, they become under control, and we begin to walk with God. Now James turns in the next few verses to give us a picture of this wild and uncontrolled fire that the tongue starts. He says this, in the last half of verse 5 and down to verse 8, consider what a great forest fire is set, what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind, but no human can tame the tongue. It is restful, it is restless, evil, full of deadly poison. When I was a very young man, actually a boy, we lived kind of where we lived, and then about a mile through the woods was another little community. And there were some boys that lived over there, and my brother and I were big friends with them. And their claim to fame was burning down the woods. It seemed like they were Sullivans. It seemed like every time the Sullivan boys got matches, they burnt down the woods. So I never, you know, my dad used to tell us every time we'd go over there, he'd say, look, don't be playing with them boys in matches. You're going to burn down the woods. And I used to think, Dad, it's only a book of matches. We're not going to burn down the woods. And I said it to him. I said, Dad, why we can't build a fire big enough with a book of matches? You know, back then they were paper matches. You don't even see them anymore. Tells you how old I am. You got them. People gave them away as advertisements. And I'm thinking, what a bad idea that was, that you would give little boys, you know, you'd put them in a, like they do mints. So you could, I could go in a store and just pick up a book of matches. It was a terrible idea. But Dad would say to us, look, you don't know what that little fire is going to start. And that's what James is telling us. That a small spark starts a great fire. When we use our tongue in the wrong way, it destroys everything in its path. How many of you remember seeing the pictures of the forest fires in Chattanooga and how it just went across the whole skyline and destroyed everything in its wake. With our words, just like a match, we start fires we can't put out. This is why I hear in my office things like this. Preacher, all I said was this. Match. And she went ballistic. And she went off for 30 minutes. That's the fire. Maybe you understand it better like this. All I said to my mom was this. All I said was, you pick, I don't know, little words. I just cheated on one test. Or this one got me in big trouble. I skipped school. Three words. I told my mom that. A match. She went crazy. Put me on restriction till I was 30. That's the point of the illustration here. You know, if you're a married couple and a husband says to his wife simple things like, well, I don't know, pick, I cheated. It starts a forest fire that we cannot put out. And do you know what makes our words so powerful? You know why James writes this to us? Why he makes this so clear? Why he just hammers this home? Is because what we don't want to think about... See, we like to think we speak to people's ears. But here's the thing. I don't speak to people's ears. You don't speak to people's ears. What James understands is that our words fall on the souls of people. And you go, well, Billy, not everything I say does that. You're right. But a lot of what you do and a lot of what you say, and you don't even want to admit it, falls on the very souls of the men and women in your path. And you know how I know this? I bet you, without a doubt, I could ask each one of you here the most destructive words that were ever spoken into your life, and in just a minute you could tell me those three words. Five words, maybe. I could also ask you about the most encouraging words that were ever spoken into my life, into your life, and you could tell them right away. One of the guys that spoke some of the most encouraging words into my life ever is here today. He's Fred Skinner. He came here as a retired preacher from Carrollton and spoke into my life powerful words of encouragement. I am forever grateful for what Fred said to me and the encouragement that he spoke into my life. We have power in our words because they fall on the souls of people. And James says, take this seriously. It's like a great forest fire. I also understand this from being a dad. I don't know if there is more powerful words for a dad to speak to his kids than to say, I'm proud of you. And I don't know what can be more discouraging to a child than to never hear from their father, I'm proud of you. In verse 6, he begins to say that the tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the body. Sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and itself set on fire by hell. We each carry around a loaded gun in our mouths. Do you realize that? It's like a loaded gun. There is no telling what we can do, the damage we could do if we let our tongues get out of control. Do you know how wars get started? Words. You know how divorces happen? Words. Do you know how people's self-esteem is crushed? Words. Do you know how countries are divided? Words. Do you know what happens to the heart of a kid when he sits in a bedroom and listens to his mom and dad exchange words that are horrible, it crushes them. So we need to be careful. We need to understand that it's like a loaded gun. If I just knew the power. You know, if we all came in here today and I was handing out 357s at the back with bullets in them, first of all, y'all look crazy. Most of y'all might leave. At the very least, some of y'all would be walking around like, oh my God, I can't wait to leave and give this gun back. We have more power in our mouths to do damage to people's lives and into the world around us than if we were carrying guns. And James says, be careful how you use this. It corrupts the whole body. Now, how do you know this? Let me ask you a question. How many of you have ever had your kids disrespect you or speak out in a way that you thought was inappropriate? Anybody here ever put their kids... Kate doesn't talk yet, Will. Anybody here ever put their kids in time out because they were disrespectful with their mouths? Everybody else's kids? Nancy. Let me ask you a question. Anybody here just put your kid's mouth in time out? Just go, okay, look, just your mouth's in time out. You can watch TV, play with the iPad, do whatever else you want, but your mouth's in time out. No, we put your whole body in time out. Why? Because there's a connection between the body and the mouth. If you go to work tomorrow and say the wrong things, will they fire your mouth? Okay, well, this makes such good common sense to us everywhere else, but we don't get it when it comes to our tongues because we have this idea that, guess what? I'll just say what? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say such. You ever said something that really hurt somebody and you go, I don't understand why you're so mad. I'm sorry, I just said so-and-so. I didn't really mean it. Try that one in your marriage. Yeah. It controls our body. He finishes by saying, it's set on fire by hell. Wow. What does that mean? It means you came into this world with your pilot light lit. You were ready. You know, if you want to go back and look how sin came into the world, you can go back into Genesis and read. It's Adam and Eve talking, and Eve's giving Adam some words, and guess what? It's downhill since then. You came into this world with the potential to hurt people with your tongue. And you go, oh no, not my little baby, not my precious angel. Let me ask you something. How many of you taught your kids to say, mama? Did this, held your baby and went, mama, mama, dada. I'm trying to get Billy and them. I said, you can't do that. It's only pawpaw. It's the only thing that works. The only thing that you'll be able to say. Now, how many of you did this? No. No. Can you say no? How many of your kids could say no before you ever wanted them to say no? How many of them say no continually when you don't want them to say no? You came into this world. This is what James is telling us. Your pilot light is lit. Your tongue has the potential to do damage. You don't think, you think maybe not. You think they'll grow out of it? How many of you have ever heard a 13-year-old girl go, toss them eyes and make that little noise? Anybody teach their kid that? No. Why? Okay, you don't think, it's not just little girls. I can remember Carol saying, if Billy looks at me one more time and goes, huh? Huh? Like he's paying me no attention at all in the entire world. He's totally disrespecting me. I've been listening and all he can say is, huh? Then the next part comes, you know what she says? You know where you learned that from, don't you? I go, it's grandfather. This is why James gives us such a powerful warning about the tongue. It is able to create such damage. There's such power there. It's right on the cusp. And now we go into verse 8. And he talks about subduing animals. And when I first read this, I'm kind of like, what does this mean? Animals in my tongue? The idea here is that we have all the animals under control. We have subdued them. You know, it's shark week this week. Nobody went to sleep last night going, I wonder if there's a shark under my bed. You know? I think about, we lived in Florida, go to SeaWorld. I remember when Shamu came out, the first Shamu. You know, you got this killer whale, teeth everywhere, people riding it. I'm like, you people are crazy. But the idea here is that we have subdued all kinds of animals, that we have them under control, but we cannot control our tongues. And what James is talking to us about is that no matter how mature I get to be as a Christian, no matter how much I grow in my faith, the potential for me to do harm with my tongue will always be there. You know, it doesn't matter if I live to be old enough to be a great, 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 great pawpaw, I'm still going to have the potential to crush the young lives of my grandchildren by the words that I speak. And we need to be aware that that potential does not go away. Because see, what happens is, I think, as we grow and mature in our walk with faith, you know what happens is we kind of think we got this beat. And before you know it, little words start to creep in. And it grows and it grows and it grows. And before you know it, our tongue is now doing more harm. And what's sad to me is, you know what? We kind of say it's okay if you reach a certain age. You know, they're old enough to say whatever they want to say and get away with it. What James is saying here is, guess what? You don't ever get old enough to say what you want to say and get away with it. There's always potential for you to do harm. And now he begins to ask some questions in the last part of these verses. He says this in verses 9 through 12. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth we praise, out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers and sisters, can a fig bear olives, a fig tree bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. When he says this should not be, what he means here is this can't happen. It all stems from our heart. If we truly love God, then we begin to control our tongues. We still have the potential to hurt people, but we don't use it. And I think that's a big problem in our culture. We think, you know, I just don't want to miss my turn to say something. James has already told us what? Be slow to speak, quick to listen. And for most of us, and for me a long time, I think the real problem with this text is, you know what? I just wanted to learn to quit saying the wrong things. I had this idea that if I tame my tongue, I just would not say bad things. But see, I think if we truly love God and tame our tongues, then we do not only not say the bad things, we begin to speak life into those around us with what we say. That what the souls of the people around us hear is the gospel of Jesus, the good news. Paul writes in Galatians, he says, the fruit of the Spirit is what? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, self-control. Okay, guess what? Does that sound like the words you speak? See, if I was slow to speak, quick to listen, I might speak like that. Paul also writes in Ephesians 4, as he's talking to us about this idea of Christian living, he says this, do not, it's very clear, Not a little, not sometimes, not if they have different political beliefs than you, not if they're a different race. He says, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth. Don't do it. None. Do not in any. That covers everything you say. Just in case you were wondering. Even means how you talk to your wife, the people at the drive-thru. I went through the drive-thru this morning to get biscuits before I came to church. Me and Anthony have biscuits every Sunday morning. I am so thankful. I was so convicted by this passage because the lady, I had to give the order. It was two biscuits and one drink, four times into the speaker. And all I could hear from her was, rawr, 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 rawr. And finally, I just put it in gear and drove around to the window. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of our mouths, but only that which is helpful or building up others according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Taming our tongues is not just not saying the wrong thing. It is learning to speak life, that the words from our mouths that fall on the souls of the people around us would bring life, not death. He goes on to say, and do not grieve the Holy Spirit with whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Get rid of all bitterness, rage and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as Christ God forgave you. So I want to talk to you this morning. We've got to learn to tame our tongues. It doesn't matter what the culture says, I cannot just open my mouth and let it fall out. You know as well as I know that I'm sorry doesn't fix everything you've ever said. And if we're followers of Christ Jesus, if He's worked in our hearts, then we need to be mindful of what we say. So I want to challenge you this morning to stop. Just stop today. Everybody came here, everybody's got a minute. Stop. Take this opportunity to not just quit saying the wrong thing, but right now, in this moment, in this time, start thinking about the words of life that you're going to speak into somebody else. Because here's what I know on a real practical basis. I don't stop doing anything very well. You know what I do? And it's true for everybody, really, if we think about it. This is just my heart speaking to yours. I don't stop doing something else. Stop doing something. I start doing something else. Carol's got me eating grainy bread. It's terrible. She let me go in the store the other day. I came out with a giant loaf of squishy white bread for tomato sandwiches. And then she finally looked at me the other day and she said, "This is good." I said, "I know. We can get more." She says, "It's not good for us." I didn't stop eating bread. I started eating whole grain, 42 nut bread or something. I don't know. It's crazy. Tastes like peanuts ground up. But see, that's the idea. That's what James is talking to us about. For us, we just want to go, you know what? I didn't say a bad thing. Start saying good things. And start thinking about the people you're going to say them to right now. Because that's what it means to tame your tongue. And see, from a soul that's been regenerated to life from death should flow words of life, not death. So speak words of life. Let's pray.